Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. All right, well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for January 23rd, 2013. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. Thank you as well for tolerating this raspy voice today. We are just getting over what seems to be a month of colds at our house. Don't you hate? I hate when that happens. But I'm happy to say this is the worst of it, a raspy voice. I don't have a cold. I think it's the vitamin D. I really mean that. But anyway, I have a great show planned for you today. This week on The Healthy Mind, well, do you have any bad habits? Is there something you're just not too happy about? It could be eating too much, or not exercising enough, or smoking. Any of those habits, behaviors, that even though we know we shouldn't be doing them, we continue to do them. We're going to be talking about breaking bad habits, understanding how and why these habits, these behaviors occur, and what we can do today to start making important changes so that we don't feel so bad about the things that we do and really move towards a happier and a healthier life. So the topic of bad habits and how we can break them this week on The Healthy Mind. In news, and you're going to want to stick around for the second half of the program, some very interesting health news that came out over the last week. First off, continuing on some of the mind-body topics that I talked about both last week and as we focus on here on The Healthy Mind, loneliness. A new study that has shown that loneliness is bad for our health. And I really think you're going to be surprised at the impact that loneliness, really an emotion, has on our physical health. We'll also talk about the fact that you've got to be careful when you haven't slept well, because it makes you feel less compassionate and appreciative of your partner. So some really interesting studies. We're going to do some headlines, and heck, we've got ourselves a pretty good podcast. So let's begin. Okay, well, in getting ready for this week's podcast, I counted the steps to my basement. Yeah, that's what I did. I counted the steps to my basement. Now, I'm not losing it. There are 9 steps to go from the upper level to my basement. And I think we can agree that that's not a whole lot of steps to get to the basement, right? It's fairly easy. And in fact, I do it quite a bit, almost every day. There's a whole lot of reasons to go down there. Our laundry is down there, so I might have to take dirty clothes down there or pick up clean clothes to take them upstairs. We've got another refrigerator down there, maybe get food or water from down there that we're storing, or work on the website or the podcast. So I hope you can see that I am constantly going up and down those stairs. 9 steps to the basement. Now, you know what else is in the basement? A treadmill. Yeah, that's right. We have a treadmill here. Well, we bought it, maybe about a year ago. We thought we were going to start getting in shape. And we plugged it in. We were very excited. I walked on it a few times, but despite the ease of being able to go down those stairs for all the things that I have to do several times a day, I haven't gotten on that treadmill. I haven't. Sometimes I'll sit down here and I'm a foot or two away from it. It's staring me in the face saying,
Peter, what are you doing? Why did you buy me? Turn me on and start exercising.
Yes, my dear listeners, for you see, my treadmill has a sinister voice. But despite that sinister voice and my good health, I don't get on that treadmill. I realize on an intellectual level that it is important for me to get on that treadmill and exercise for my health. But I don't do it. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm a psychiatrist. And the only reason I say that is, just by my chosen profession, I've spent and invested time in understanding how the mind works. But yet, with all that knowledge, emotions and thoughts take over. And I don't get on that treadmill. And this is where I want to go today. I want to talk about the topic of bad habits. Why do we continue with behaviors that either get in our way of achieving our success or directly impact our health in a negative way? Smoking, overeating, drugs. Why do we do these things? And why is it that it's so hard to break those patterns of behavior, these habits? Why are habits so hard to break? So that's what we're going to focus on today. We're going to talk about the psychology of habits, how they form, and we'll talk about ways, strategies that we can use to change our behavior. What does the research out there show us? What are some things that we should be doing starting today on our path to breaking those habits so that we can live happier and healthier lives? So that's what we're talking about today on The Healthy Mind. And hopefully by the end of the podcast, I'm going to be at a place where I can get on that treadmill. So, the first part, and I'm going to break this down into three areas: awareness, preparation, and action. Now, the first part is awareness. Why is it that these habits form in the first place? And why is it that they're so hard to break? So let me use an example or an illustration. I want you to picture yourself taking a shower. Just picture how you typically go through that, the routine. Maybe you start in the head and go down, or maybe you start on your chest first and move, however it is, but picture your routine. Okay, now, when you're actually in the shower, how much do you focus on that actual technique and that you're literally thinking about, where do I have to go next? I start in my head, then I do my shoulder and into my legs, right? None at all. It's all automatic. I'm not thinking about how I'm going to shower. I'm thinking about, what's the day going to be like? What do I have to get done? And what time am I getting home? I'm not thinking about where my hands have to go next. Okay, it's automatic. And it's become automatic because of repetition and also that it is very beneficial. There is a benefit for us to taking a shower. We feel clean, we wake up, we start the day. It gets reinforced over and over and over. And we have hundreds of these behaviors that we do throughout the day. We don't even realize that we're doing them. Think about driving to work and then coming home. Sometimes we're so deep in thought, we don't even realize we've driven all the way home. I know there's been times where I've thought that. We're on automatic pilot. But the reason that we're on automatic pilot and these behaviors just happen instinctively has to do with things like repetition. We've done them over and over so many times that they're just basic behaviors. We don't even have to think about them. And also, there's a reward, right? You take a shower in the morning, you wake up, you feel fresh, you're ready to go, you get motivated, and on and on and on. But these things are important because just like we reinforce the positive behaviors, like taking a shower and feeling clean or going to work and coming home, we can do the same and the same principles are operating there with some of our negative behaviors or our bad habits. So what do I mean? Well, habits, whether they're good or bad habits, continue to be reinforced because, one, we continue to do them, and there's skin in the game for us. There's some benefit, even if the behavior can harm us or hurt us or tear apart our self-esteem. How is this possible, you say? Well, let me give you another example. Smoking. On its surface, it makes no sense. There's no reason why a person should be smoking. If we're just looking at it by the facts, they're dangerous, they cost a ton of money. We know that they're linked to cardiovascular disease, lung cancer. You are literally and potentially killing yourself every time you smoke. But that doesn't stop people from smoking, at least some people. Why? Why does this happen? And really, smoking is the perfect example to illustrate the points I'm trying to make about habits. People start early in their lives to smoke, so the repetition continues, and it's associated with pleasure, or at least stress relief. I think this is why it's one of the hardest habits to break, because it isn't just about the knowledge that it is dangerous and that should be enough for us to stop, but oftentimes when people take a smoke break, it's just that. It's a smoke break. You're breaking away from something that maybe is either boring or stressful, and you're giving yourself a few minutes to relax and have a smoke. Now, on top of that, and that's just enough right there for it to be reinforcement, it takes me away from something that is painful. But in addition to that, you also get a little bit of a bump or a push from the nicotine. It makes you feel just a little bit better, just in that instant. So not only are you breaking away from a stressful situation, you're also getting just a little bit of jolt of nicotine, and it's pleasurable. And that can be a very powerful combination to reinforce behaviors and develop habits. And it really doesn't matter what it is in terms of bad habits. It can be procrastination or overeating, under-exercising, or even something like alcohol and drugs. The fact that it is done repetitively, and in some way there is some relief or pleasure or removal from pain, becomes a very powerful combination to reinforce the behavior. And this is how habits start and how they continue to perpetuate. And then, yes, there's dopamine, a mood chemical in the brain. And dopamine is the chemical in the brain that is responsible for us feeling pleasure. So no matter the behavior, if we get a squirt of dopamine, and we feel better, there's a greater likelihood we're going to continue that behavior in the future, irrespective of whether it is good or bad for us. Okay? So some basic principles there as we talk about habits, just laying the groundwork. Now, what does the research tell us about our behaviors, our actions, and habits? And what I want to do is focus on a couple of these research findings. First off, and I've talked about this before, actually I've talked about both of these before on The Healthy Mind, but more recently, we've talked about the fact that scientists have found that when we have a particular pattern of behavior that we've learned and we almost do instinctively, we don't have to think about it, driving a car, taking a shower, etc., our brain actually uses less energy to do things that we've already learned to do, take a shower, drive to work. We've learned the behavior, our brain knows how to do it, and it saves energy. Makes sense. You want to have more energy for either a threat that's coming at you or something new that you have to do. But there's the rub, ladies and gentlemen, the key point. We have to expend energy to change a behavior that's already become habit, okay? First study. Now, the next principle of human behavior. In general, when we are stressed, say we're anxious or depressed or we've been traumatized, something like that, but we're stressed, we tend not to do anything, at least anything different. Our behaviors stay pretty consistent. We rely on the behaviors that have brought us to that point. And we've talked about this on The Healthy Mind as well, where this principle of system justification, where even if a system is corrupt, during times of stress, people will not only rely, but defend a system, even though they know it's corrupt, because of the anxiety and stress that is generated. And this doesn't happen just on a system level, but these are the operating principles for our bad habits. We rely on these behaviors during times of stress because they relieve our anxiety, even though in the long run, they can hurt us. So these two principles of human behavior are really important as we're talking and understanding about habits. Why? Because just like the positive habits, there are reasons that bad habits develop. It might be that it is the easier thing to do. Let's take procrastination. It's an easier thing to do. If I delay and not do it now, I get that reward right away. Boom! A squirt of dopamine gets released in my brain, and I feel good, and the behavior is reinforced. Doesn't matter that I'm going to have to pay for it later. In the moment, it feels good. I get reinforced. And when I'm stressed, say, hey, I want to get on that treadmill, but that makes me nervous because it's a whole new behavior. One, I have to spend more energy to change my behavior. And also, because I'm stressed, oh my gosh, I got to get on that. I'm going to sweat. It's going to take so much time. I've got a million things to do. Boom. We rely on our typical behaviors, our baseline behaviors, even if they are detrimental to us. I don't get on the treadmill. I'm not exercising. So before we start on our road to breaking bad habits, we have to understand what we're fighting against first, right? So there has to be this awareness. The awareness of A, how do these behaviors start? And B, what are some of the obstacles in our way so that we can prepare for them? And that's where I go to with the next part of this in approaching and tackling bad habits, preparation. And there are many ways that we can prepare ourselves, put the odds in our favor as we start to take action and really improve some of those bad habits and really put into place good habits that are healthy and helpful for us. First off, take the time to think about those bad habits. No matter what they are, why do they happen and when do they happen? Take the time to really think about it and write it down. Take a log. Understand what is going on when a behavior or an action that you're not either proud of or want to change or seemingly can't change. Try and understand what some of the triggers are. By understanding what's going on in our minds or in our lives at the moment that that behavior begins is so empowering. It's one of the most powerful things that you can do. Understanding the triggers, being consciously aware of them, and really figuring out how to avoid them. That's part of the preparation. It's amazing how many people won't do that. Literally slow it down. What was going on when I decided not to exercise, to eat that dessert, to take that drink, to smoke that cigarette? In doing so, patterns emerge. We begin to understand ourselves more, and that can be very empowering. And really, it's surprising to me when I talk about this with individuals, how little time is taken to really think about that. And it makes sense. I get it. I don't think that much about taking a shower or what triggers me. I get up, I go take a shower. And in that same way, the negative behaviors can be that routine and that pattern that we haven't bothered to think about what leads to that. What's the trigger to even know how to prepare? Now, another thing that is very, very important, in order to change a behavior, no matter what it is, you've got to know why you want to change that behavior. Having a clear picture of why you want to change and keeping that in your mind is a very important part of preparing for taking action. And this really is the final step in changing that behavior, breaking that bad habit, taking action. What are the things that I can do to change my behavior and break these habits? Well, first off, let me ask you this. How long do you think it takes for a new habit to form, a new behavior? A week? A month? A year? Well, an interesting study last year in the European Journal of Social Psychology, and the researcher was Dr. Philippa Lally, and what they found was that on average, it takes about 66 days on average for people to learn a new behavior where it becomes habit. 66 days. Something to just kind of keep in mind as you are trying to measure your progress, okay? But what are some actions? What really works in being able to change our behavior? Well, first off, put obstacles in your way to prevent you from doing some of the behaviors that you're trying to change. For example, If you find that you are snacking quite a bit on high-calorie foods and you're trying to lose weight, say snacks and things that aren't good for you, get them out of the house. Make it work to go and get those things, even though it is a routine habit. Remember, it takes energy to break those behaviors. So putting that obstacle in our way so that we don't automatically go to that behavior or give into the emotion, we've got a chance for logic to kick in, goes a long way and is very, very powerful in breaking those behaviors. Another thing is tell people about what you're trying to do, about the behavior that you're trying to change. It's so powerful when we tell people about it, or if we write it down, literally write down what it is that we want to change. Both of those put more skin in the game for us. We feel that we have a greater responsibility when we've told someone that we want to change or that we've written it down. It doesn't just sit in our brains and we forget about it. These are all really important things to do. And then some new studies that have looked at these if-then statements that are fascinating to help break that cycle of behavior. Pairing an if-then statement with a certain bad habit will help to break it. So let me just give an example. If I start thinking about having a dessert, then I won't do it. Or then I'll go take a walk. And repeating that anytime a trigger is there for your behavior or your habit. Again, it frustrates the automatic response. You don't just go from trigger need to satisfying it. And behaviors start to change. You do this one step at a time. Take your time and take it step by step. And critically, reward yourself. You have to reward yourself. Remember the dopamine, right? Like the smoking analogy or some type of behavior, procrastination or addiction, whatever it may be, we get a jolt of dopamine and that feels pleasurable. And that is very, very powerful to reinforcing that behavior. So as you change your behaviors and it feels more like work at the beginning, make sure that you are rewarding yourself regularly, however it may be. You've done something successfully for a day or a few days. Treat yourself to something. It doesn't have to be big. But that there is a reward with it. You get that dopamine squirt. It really is important. And a lot of times people don't do that. And it really is a critical part of the process. So as we start thinking about breaking our habits, trying to move towards healthier behaviors and shedding those behaviors that either hurt us or don't allow us to really achieve our full potential, it's a process of awareness. First off, understanding the whole process of how we form these habits, what is going on there. Secondly, preparation, preparing, understanding what we're going to do, how we are going to face those times when we are vulnerable, and then taking action. Awareness, preparation, and action. And you will see your habits begin to change. It'll happen because we're human. We all can do this. And when you start to see that change in yourself, it's empowering and you feel good about yourself. You're confident and you take on more. It is an incredible process and you can do it. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. You'll see. And that, my friends, is a wonderful step to take as we walk down our road to the healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, wow, some interesting health news this week. The first story, the headline, Loneliness is Bad for Our Health. It was a really interesting study right here in Columbus, Ohio, at Ohio State University. And we've talked about this mind-body connection. We talked about it last week on the podcast, the fact that as we try to get emotions under control, getting treatment for depression and anxiety, well, part of it is, yes, you want to feel better, but the other part is that emotions impact our physical well-being and our health. And this study illustrates some of this. What researchers had found at Ohio State University was that when individuals were lonely and everything else was controlled out, but the main factor was loneliness, two things happen. Number one, their immunity decreased, their immune system weakened somewhat, and inflammation increased in the body. Now, what they had found was that two of the viruses that they studied, both herpes virus, one was Epstein-Barr virus, which many know is thought to be implicated in chronic fatigue syndrome, and also cytomegalovirus. Both of those are herpes virus. What they found was that in lonely individuals in this study, they had a higher level of antibodies to this virus. Now, what does that mean? Well, herpes viruses are in our body. They tend to be in many of our bodies. It's just viruses that we're very susceptible to getting. But not everyone has an infection. But when our immunity goes down and that virus gets activated, antibodies are released into the bloodstream. And what the researchers found was that when everything else was controlled out except for loneliness, lonely individuals had more antibodies to these viruses, suggesting a lowered immune system because the virus was more active. Now, in the second part of the study, they also looked at various inflammatory markers, proteins that fire up when the body has more inflammation going on within it. And what they found, two important proteins, one that's known as interleukin-6 and another one known as tumor necrosis factor, both of these proteins are known as cytokines, were elevated in the individuals when they were lonely compared to controls who were either healthy or didn't have loneliness. Immunity and increased inflammation. Ladies and gentlemen, the increase in the health problems, or at least inflammation and decreased immunity here, were due to an emotion, loneliness. So I hope you begin to appreciate, and I'm going to continue to pound this probably more than you're going to want to hear, but it is so important. When we talk about making sure that you have the best positive health possible, the best positive emotional health possible, it's not just so you're feeling happy. But as stories like this, studies like this at Ohio State University reveal, the emotions, in this case loneliness, has a huge impact on our health. Loneliness can lead to immune system problems and increased inflammation, the mind-body relationship. Okay, now, let me ask you this. Do you feel appreciated in your relationship? Your partner, your spouse, whoever it may be, your romantic relationships, do they appreciate all that you do? Now, are there times maybe, though, that they don't, that they just don't show the gratitude you feel they should? Why does that happen? Well, according to a new study, it might be due to, of all things, insomnia. The headline, Feeling Unappreciated? How Insomnia Affects Your Love Life. This was done out of the University of California at Berkeley, and researchers there found that sleep deprivation significantly impacts gratitude in our romantic relationships. And because of this dynamic where individuals tend to be more selfish or more tired, that they just don't say thanks because they're so sleep deprived, well, it can lead to problems, and at the very least, people feel taken for granted. Now, Dr. Amy Gordon, a psychologist at UC Berkeley, states, quote, poor sleep may make us more selfish as we prioritize our own needs over our own partners, end of quotes. And I think we can relate to that. Think about times when you haven't slept that well, any of us, and how do we feel? We tend to be more to ourselves. We might be a little bit more irritable. We don't feel like talking to people. I guess this makes sense, that if you haven't slept well or if you're sleep deprived, that one of the things it could affect are your romantic relationships. Now, the interesting thing that Dr. Gordon talks about is the fact that we almost wear a lack of sleep or insomnia as a badge of honor today. People say that they're too busy to sleep or they're proud because they've worked so hard that they haven't slept. But beyond the physical effects of not getting enough sleep, the healing effects of sleep, there are significant emotional issues. And we've talked about that before, risks for depression and insomnia, and certainly mania if one has a bipolar diagnosis. But what they did was they researched about 60 couples, and they asked them to keep a diary of their sleep habits, and then keep a log of whether or not they were getting along on these particular days. And what they found was that when people didn't sleep well, you didn't get enough sleep, we didn't show gratitude, and that left our partners feeling as if we don't appreciate them. So, the moral of the story? Get your sleep. You have to. It's so important for your physical well-being, but also for your relationships. And most importantly, whether you've slept well or not, please tell your loved ones that you love them, you're thankful, and you're so appreciative that they're around. Don't let your lack of sleep get in the way of telling them exactly how much you love them. Okay, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the rest of the news in a segment I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Frequent multitaskers are bad at it. Most people believe that they can multitask effectively, but a University of Utah study indicates that people who multitask the most, including talking on a cell phone while driving, are least capable of doing so. The next headline. A new study suggests that many apples a day keep the blues at bay. Eating more fruits and vegetables may make young people calmer, happier, and more energetic in their daily life. This according to new research from New Zealand's University of Otago. And finally, the headline, Household Chores, Gender Equality's Final Frontier. Working class couples that buck convention and live together rather than getting married take on more traditional roles when it comes to housework. This according to a new study by Cornell University sociologist. And what happened? Listen to this. Women do a disproportionate share of the housework even when the women work and the men don't. Oh man, guys, step up. Come on. Especially if you're not working. Oh, man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have done it again. You and I, we have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Don't forget to sign up for the absolutely free monthly newsletter. You can do so right there on the homepage. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything, I want to hear from you. The email address is peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.